Well, good morning to you all. Happy New Year, of course, to you. Welcome to 2022. And as you know, this first service is all online, so I'm online as well this morning. And I'm going to ask a question in the message this morning and attempt to answer that question as well. And to do that, we've got two readings we're going to look at today. So here are the fir is the first of our two readings. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star as it's rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you've found him, bring me word so that I too may go and pay him homage." When they'd heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. And entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So I said we had a question this morning, and my question is simply this: What does God want from me? What does God want from me? And it comes into the story of the wise men, because obviously the wise men are bringing gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So it prompted me to think, what does God want from me? And I think it's a question we need to answer, although I don't think that we necessarily want to answer the question. I think it's a hard question to ask at the moment. That's because the question asks something of us, and yet we're not exactly feeling as if we have much to give at the moment. Many of us are worn out, done in, and so have to think about something else we have to do, something else we have to give. Perhaps we're in danger of that tipping us over the edge. My newspaper read this week tells me that the NHS is tired. They've been flat out for almost 2 years. But then again, I think that applies to most people, whether we're employed, retired, workers, volunteers. We've all been working incredibly hard. Resources are thin. Costs are up. Did you notice how much your Christmas food shop just cost you? Money is in short supply, and there are less and less people to do the work. Talking to a big employer recently, they talked about how early retirement and Brexit has shrunk their workforce. And obviously this phenomenon, HOGO, the hassle of going out, means that we're disinclined to make the effort to get involved. We feel we must do good and fill the deficit that's emerged, especially as the need increases, because we are Christians and we do that, don't we? But we are weary, weary in our bodies, weary in our minds. So for me to ask this morning, what does God want from me, can sound as if somehow we must squeeze the last bit of blood out of the stone, which is our lives. Come on, Ash, give us a break. Don't ask us that question just now. Matthew tells us about this visit and gifts of the Magi, the wise men. And it's a strange visit, isn't it? Given that the word Magi can be translated astrologer or magician, and other parts of the Bible explicitly warn us against engaging with such people. Of course, in popular culture, the Magi have become kings, perhaps based on Psalm 72, where the three kings of Tarshish and Sheba and Seba bring their gifts and fall down before the Messiah. In the 8th century, these three Magi kings were given names. So we have Caspar, Melchior and Balthazar. And in the 16th century, around the time of the Renaissance, they were given kind of ethnic identities. So one is becomes black and the other two become with paler skin. So that emerges. Of course, in church, we mostly talk about the gifts that they bring, because these gifts are really the main point and purpose of the Magi. These gifts will define who this baby is and verify that he is worthy of our devotion. The gold designates his royalty, the frankincense his holiness, and the myrrh the incense of death. And to bring these gifts to the Messiah says something also about the giver as well as the Messiah, the receiver. They say something of the Magi, that the Magi are faithful and they are true in recognizing who he is. And their worship of this child is utterly appropriate. And so, millions of people around the UK this Christmas, whether they are aware of it or not, have reenacted the worship of the Magi through the humble Christmas cracker. So what they did, they pulled the cracker and they pulled out, can find it. Of course, they pulled out a crown to designate the king. They brought out what? A little bit of paper. Now we have jokes on our bits of paper today, but do you remember these to be kind of mottos or aphorisms? Little pearls of wisdom, because they are wise men. And also in here, well, I get a little game, a little cardboard gift. Kingship, wisdom, and a gift from a king, all reenacted through the Christmas cracker. Also, if we were part of the high church, say Roman Catholics or Lutherans, it would be customary on the 6th of January, which is we call Epiphany in the church calendar, the Feast of the Wise Men, for people to get some chalk and to chalk up above the front door of our homes the letters CMB, which represents the Latin Christus Mansionem Benedictat, which if you're into your Latin means God bless this house. CMB, Christus Mansionem Benedictat, God bless this house. But of course CMB also stands for Caspar, Melchior, Balthazar. Now there's an idea for you to do on Thursday. Chalk that above your front door and see what your neighbours say to that. So there are the wise men giving their gifts. And today's question is, what does God want from me? Well, he wants something. He wants something. And that something is something which validates who he is, and something which demonstrates our true devotion. And I think to develop the answer, I want to turn to our second passage this morning, which comes from Micah 6. It says in verse 6, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with tens of thousands of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. So Micah 6 verse 6 asks a very similar question to our "What does God want from me?" The writer asks, "With what shall I come before the Lord?" And again, it assumes that there is something which we can give to God. And as we've found, that that is a completely appropriate thing to do. But as soon as the question begins to get answered, it starts to unravel as the writer begins to list the possibilities of what could be given to God. Lists all these amazing things: burnt offerings, year-old calves, 1,000 rams, 10,000 rivers of oil, his own firstborn child. I guess to the writer's credit, the gifts are costly. In fact, when you look at it, each gift outdoes the previous one. They ratchet it up until the ultimate devotion, the greatest gift, is offered. Your own firstborn, your own child. Doing that, obviously, it's recounting the story of Abraham and his obedience to sacrifice to God his very son Isaac. But we should have spotted the fact that these answers must be wrong answers. I mean, what normal person could give 1,000 rams? Who could possibly give 10,000 rivers of oil? They're impossible. That's the whole point. They must be wrong. The writer's almost poking fun at the idea that we could possibly give God all this stuff. These things are utterly beyond us. So it would be ridiculous to even attempt it. Yet we still do attempt it. Even in my modern, rational, evangelical mind, the idea that I might give stuff to God to please him and therefore curry favour he might bless me is strangely still alive and well. Or is it only me? These possible answers all assume wrongly that God wants some stuff from us. And the answers show that Israel, in giving those answers, has completely understood this thing, completely misunderstood its relationship with God. That we can think in terms of giving God commodities, stuff, that we think that just like other gods want stuff, that might be appropriate to God. And yet, of course, the Bible tells us that's absolutely not what God wants from us, and we should know this. So in Psalm 50, we read, "I will not, says God, accept a bull from your house or goats from your field." Why? Verse 10, "For every wild animal in the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills." God doesn't need stuff because it all belongs to him already. So when we ask the question, "What does God want from me?" at this exhausted state that I find myself at the turn of the year, beginning of 2022, why on earth do we think that we must give him stuff? I think we're tempted to think that way because we are at times blind to God's goodness, blind to his character and his nature. We think of it as being transactional. I'll do this, I'll give this stuff to God and he'll do this stuff for me. And we forget that God just gives and just blesses. And the psalmist repeatedly tells us that the Lord is gracious and compassionate. And if I think that God wants stuff off me, then perhaps I'm just judging God by my own flawed standards and displaying my abject inability to understand who God truly is, because he's good and he's kind and he's gracious and he's loving and he's generous. Verse 8 of Micah 6 answers the question for us: what does God want from me? What does the Lord require of you? What does he want? Well, the answer is somewhat surprising because he doesn't want anything. Nothing. No thing. It says in verse 8, he's told you, O mortal, what is good and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. What God wants is that we do justice. That's all about power. That we in our lives might actively redistribute power. We correct the inequality that marginalizes some and brings excessive reward and riches to other. And as people, you and I, of great power, we should step in and help those who are weaker. We do justice. That we love kindness. Kindness is a bit of a disastrously weak translation. What it perhaps better says in other translations is that we be compassionate and loyal in our love. It's about loyal, faithful, ongoing love, like a lifelong committed marriage. I was watching, bizarrely, Channel 4's First Dates the other day. And there was this couple, and both said that they'd struggled with relationships. Both said that their previous relationships had been disasters. And as they got to know each other, they kind of opened up and they shared more about their lives and what had happened. And the lad, in opening up and saying, said to this girl sitting opposite him that the reason the previous relationship ended was because he cheated on his girlfriend. And then, alone, just a camera, the girl talks about how she's trying to weigh this up. Because, as she said to the camera, once a cheater, always a cheater. I don't know. But it certainly isn't the persistent, loyal love that speaks of in Micah 6 or the girl was looking for. And thirdly, it says that we walk humbly with God. That's interesting because humbly here means to walk wisely with God, carefully with God, circumspectly with God. Walk your whole life abandoning all self-sufficiency and live each day in a way which demonstrates that life is solely derived from God, utterly depend on Him. So those initial answers to the question of what God requires all demonstrated the false idea that all God wants from us is stuff. He doesn't. It's His already. What He wants is relationship. Daily walking, covenant committed living, especially in how we use our power and resources. So it made me wonder at Christmas whether Mariah Carey had got it right all along. She said, or she sang, "I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you will ever know. Make my dreams come true, because all I want for Christmas is you." What does God want from me? His answer might be, "All I want for Christmas is you." And there's nothing new here. This is always and only what God has ever wanted from us. I did think about playing Mariah Carey before our closing song, but I'm not going to do that. Some will cheer. I apologize to others. But I'm going to play you something. Play you another recording, a hymn, which I haven't sung for a while. The hymn's words come from a long poem called The Brewing of Soma, written by an American Quaker called John Greenleaf Whittier. The poem, in its long form, retells all the great acts of religious devotion and faith that might be practiced and done for the Lord, and suggests that rather than all these great works, these strivings to give God stuff, he actually wants none of it. But rather, what he wants is a life of quiet and ordered beauty. In 2005, viewers of Songs of Praise voted it their second favourite hymn. And here it is, in an unusual setting, sung by the